begin actually first by thanking all of you for logging on. I also understand that Rabbi Karen Hochberg had a very, very warm reception to them giving of their time earlier today. And I'm really, really very grateful to them for offering their services to connect, reconnect, and support everybody. I don't know if they're going to do this at some point, but I really want to thank them for that. So I'm going to share my screen because it looks like my virtual background is eating up my shoulder. So I'm going to share my screen with you so you can see our sources. Okay. Can you see that?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Matzah and nafta. That's where we are going to end up this evening. And on the way, we'll explore some issues. Now, it has struck me over the last few days as I've been trying to prepare the Pesach packets to send out to you, the FAQs of the specific issues from this year and building off what Rabbi Hochberg has provided in the years that passed, how distant Pesach has been for many of our minds. We are almost absorbed to the point of saturation with the daily rollout of headlines, and actually to imagine that Pesach is in 2 weeks is sometimes a little difficult, but I find myself diving into the concrete preparations is actually quite helpful, and there are a lot of anxieties about what Pesach is going to look like, but the more we prepare, the more we give it thought, the more we absorb what Pesach is going to be like right now, I think the better it will be for us, and I want to go on a little journey in the time we have this evening through a very practical question that has some profound ramifications to it. And this is a question, I had a choice. I could call it matzah and nafta, or nafta rather, it's not Ashkenazis, or I could have called it man versus machine. Now I'm going to ask you for a moment, I'm going to stop sharing so I can see all your hands. How many of you prefer machine matzahs for the Seder? Wow, only one, two. Excellent. No one else can see you, I think. Is it? Oh, no, maybe they can. Oh, we've got a few there. How many prefer handmade? There you go. How many of you who prefer handmade are worried about using handmade this year? Okay, a few. For the record, I've been told that the authorities are not worried about using handmade this year. They were made a long time ago, and this virus can't really survive on surfaces for more than 2 days at most, they're assuming. I'm happy to have the doctors jump in. But either way, I can understand why you'd be worried. So this obviously has not been a question in the ether for a long time. Machine matzah is a relatively recent invention. There have always been ways to accommodate human labor. Actually, in the 1500s was the first time they had some mass rollers. That you could roll a lot of dough at the same time. But machinery, in the way that we imagine the machine matzahs today, didn't really come about until the 19th century, the 1800s. And for those of you who have been at Sudar Shlishit, at Shul, over the last few months, will know that the 19th century was a hotbed of debate about modern life, accommodating halakha to modern life, how to cope with intrusions from the outside, and innovations. And that comes to play and comes to bear on this question. But before we get to machine matzah, there is some background we need. How many of you are familiar with the term shmura matzah? How many of you get a vague sense of what that is, but aren't entirely sure what it means for matzah to be shmura? Let's put it this way. How many of you think shmura matzah means hand-baked matzah? Okay, good. So we're starting. Okay, excellent. So for a long time, I thought shmura matzah meant hand-baked matzah. And, you know, if you had machine matzah, you know, that's just a preference, but you missed out on shmura. So we're going to see that is not the case. Shmura has a very specific meaning to it, and you get machine shmura and you get handmade shmura. And they have ups and downs, and different groups from across the spectrum have different preferences. But we're going to start from the very beginning because I'm told that is a very good place to start. Was that somebody with a question or somebody just adjusting the camera? Okay. At any point, if you have a question, feel free to unmute yourself and jump in. I'm sharing my screen. We're going to start from the very beginning. This is source one. This is a pasuk, a verse in the 12th chapter of Shmot. This is in the middle of the Exodus. It's actually right in a pause before the 10th plague comes. The 9th plague happens. Darkness descends and then dissolves. And then we have this anticipatory moment when we know what's about to hit the Egyptians. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the details of what Seder is going to look like to Moshe, who hands it on to the Jewish people. And as part of the experience, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says in number one, Ushmartem et hamatzot, and you shall guard the matzot. Because on that very day I took you out of the land of Egypt. Now this Ushmartem et hamatzot, and you shall guard the matzot, sounds on its face a little ambiguous. If we weren't familiar with the term Shmur Matzah, we were reading the Chumash for the first time, we might say, what on earth does that mean? Ushmartem et hamatzot. My Miriam bought some matzahs about 3 weeks ago. They've been sitting in a room somewhere. Was I meant to be watching them the whole time? Says, guard the matzahs. What does that mean? Do I have to lock it in a safe? So there is an ambiguity there. And in the next few sources, we have different ways of reading this. Rashi, source two. Shmarten at the matzot, he says, shalo yavau lidei chimutz. This just means you have to protect them against contamination and becoming chametz. So the matzahs that Miriam bought 3 weeks ago have been sitting, I think, in vacuum-packed plastic for the last 3 weeks. I don't need to sit there. I don't need to watch them. They're protected. And this is just a technical necessity so they don't become chametz. Rashi, as is his wont, then does add some homiletics at the end from a midrash where Rabbi Yoshia says, "Al tikara et hamatzot, ela et hamitzvot." You shouldn't read it, guard the matzot, but guard the mitzvot. And I'll share with you as an aside. Anybody know Rabbi Binyamin Tabori? Familiar with the name Rabbi Binyamin Tabori? He was a rabbi, one of the Magid Shir in Gush when I was there. He was head of the Termitz on Kolal in Toronto for a while. And also he was in the Termitz on Kolal in London. Very, very sweet, knowledgeable man. And there was a chug he gave every Wednesday. All the chutznikim would come in, and he was kind of an older generation figure, and it was one of those teachers who everyone would sit, pin drop could be heard in the room, and he'd call on you to read, so the pressure was high. It wasn't quite having Rav Lichtenstein ask you to read, which was put you in a nervous wreck, but it was also nerve-inducing, and he asked me to read at one point, it was a Rambam, and he said, read the Rambam, and the Rambam quoted this pasuk. And it didn't have vowels in the Rambam that I had. And I was on the edge of my seat. Is it Ushmartem et hamatzot? Ushmartem et hamitzvot? And I didn't want to be caught out. But inevitably, when these things are 50-50, and Murphy's anywhere nearby, you pick the wrong one, which I did. But luckily, we then had this play in the Medrash, which saved me a little bit. Rav Yoshia says, don't read it. Hamatzot el hamitzvot, keder shein machmitzin et hamatzot, just as we guard matzot, so they don't become contaminate and bloated into chametz, so ein machmitzin et hamitzvah. When there is a moral obligation, a moral duty, the chance to perform goodness, don't let it become bloated. Don't let it become delayed. And that's a nice homiletic play on the pasuk. That's Rashi. And that seems pretty straightforward. Although there does become a question, if we're told that you shouldn't let matzahs become chametz, you have to watch them. I'll now ask you, when am I meant to be watching these matzahs?
From the beginning.
From the beginning. When's the beginning?
Growing.
Growing.
Growing, meaning from the time that the seeds are sown, someone has to be watching the field. That's your suggestion. So in the Ibn Ezra number 3, this is the most extreme. Hinei tzivali yot hamitzvot. I just made that mistake. Hamatzot shmurim niyamot hakatzir, from the harvest. When it's raining and they're growing, it's inevitably going to get wet. You don't have to worry about it becoming chametz or leavening at that point. But from the time of harvest, they should be watched. Now, for those of you who imagine that the Jews to the right of us tend to spend their time in the Bat Midrash, not really out in the fields, this is an exception to the rule. There is a moment when the fields across the land of Israel fill with payas, and I'm not just talking about payah in agricultural terms, but fill with payas because there is a need to watch the wheat from the moment of harvest, and I have evidence of that. There is proof right there on your screen for you to see, where you are, the grain is being watched from the very moment that it's being harvested. It's put in bags, it's taken away, it's contained in particular cellars, and it is watched round the clock. So whenever harvest season is, which I think is coming now, they will harvest this year and keep that watch for matzah for next year from the very time of harvest. So that's Rashi and the Ibn Ezra. That's what Shmura Matzah means in its essence, that you have to make sure it doesn't become chametz. It's just a concrete technical need. You could put a camera up, make sure nothing gets in, put a sensor in the room, make sure this does not become leavened. I should point out that number 4 and 5, the Rashbam and the Chizkuni have radically different readings of what Ushmatim et HaMatzah means. The Rashbam says it means La'ochlam b'yom hazeh l'zikaron. It's actually about one's intent. When one is eating, Ushmatim means to conserve these matzahs as symbolically powerful, not just as I've got to shove the food in, which I'm sure for many of us, when we're thinking about that kezias and we've got our boards out and we're measuring how much we've got to get in and we're crumbling it up, it can just be a mechanical chew. But here the Rashbam says we have to bear in mind why we're eating when we're eating. And that's what Shmura means in this context. The Chizkuni says in far more broad terms, it means Yesh Mefarshim Shelo Tivsok Mikem Achilat Matzot L'Dorei Doros. Actually, Shmura Matzah means that we have to Meshamer, we have to make sure that we are preserving this custom through the ages. But number 6 is what, which leads us to the question of Shmura in our age. And this is the Emek Davar, the Netziv. Ikar mashmaot mitzvah zu. The main meaning of what it means to guard the matzah, to have shmur matzahs, mevuah b'divrei chazal, is explained by the sages as follows. Dekai al matzot mitzvah shel laila harishon. It only refers to the matzah that you eat for the mitzvah on the first night. So the matzah you're eating on day 2, day 3, day 4, day 5, up to day 7 and 8, that is not what is being referred to when we talk about Shmura Matzah. Of course, that can't become chametz either. There's something very specific about matzah on Seder night that needs to be Shmura. And that leads us to number 7, which is Gemara in Psachim. Amar Rabba. Rabba says, Dama Karat says in the Pasuk, Ushmartem et ha-matzot. Guard the matzot, which means matzah hamishtameret. And now the next two words are key. L'shem matzah. This is not just a technical supervision to avoid leavening. This has to be an intentional guarding, l'shem matzah. So these figures in the field right here, when they are taking in the grain, they're not simply making sure it doesn't ferment or leaven. They have mental presence that this grain will be used for matzah. This grain will be used to fulfill a mitzvah to remember our Exodus. It has to have mental presence. And we'll see in a moment, and just as a tease, this is obviously going to be central when it comes to, can matzahs be made by machine? Machines, as far as I know, can't have an intention. Is that a question? Okay. Source number 8. Simply says in the underlined a bit, as Jerry mentioned, Shimu meikara mitchilato v'ad sofo ba'inam. We actually need this lishma to be from the beginning, tchilato ad sofo, till the end. So this intentional presence, this mental guarding of these grains, which turns into matzah, is from beginning to end. And the Shulchan Aruch, who is the last word when it comes to Jewish code in the medieval period, in the pre-modern period, says as follows. Hachitim she'osim behem matzat mitzvah. And that is a technical term, matzah mitzvah, meaning the matzah that you use to fulfill the mitzvah, not just any matzah. General matzah does not need to be shmura. There are some who have the custom, the minhag, to only have shmura matzah on Pesach, but really, one can have any matzah that isn't chametz. But in terms of the matzah's mitzvah, you're fulfilling the mitzvah with on Seder night, Tov l'shamram, it is good, he says, to guard them, shalo yipalo aleim mayim mishat tzira, that no water goes in it from the time of harvest. Ulupachot, and at the very least, if you can't do that, mishat tchina, from the time of grinding up the wheat. Now, I should point out, I don't know why my screen is doing that, there was a question posed this year in particular, if people are struggling to get shmura matzah, and they want to use it for the Seder, are they going to be able to fulfill the mitzvah with regular matzah? And Rav Shechter's response was, really, you need Shmura Matzah to fulfill the mitzvah in its best way. And at the very least, we should have matzah that is guarded lishma, that is worked with the intention from the time of baking. And he said, actually, if you ask the OU, Rabbi Yenak wrote in and responded to say that all matzah that is marked with the OU as kasher lePesach is made lishma. It's not all watched from the harvest, but they are all at the very least baked with that in mind. So you can fulfill your mitzvah in that regard. Now we move on underneath the nice agricultural figures there. And we see there's a little chassid there in the background as well. Nice fun. So if we get to source 10, this is where we start heading towards what counts as making it with the right intention. This is the Rosh, who's a medieval halachic figure. And he says as follows. Uva she'iltot, it says in the she'iltot, katav b'matza da'amtinu lechitin, nochri chereshet v'katan lo nafik yidei chavato. If somebody has matzah that was made by somebody not Jewish, or somebody who is mute or a child, they have not fulfilled their mitzvah. And the assumption here is, it's not good enough that somebody says, oh, I'm doing this for the mitzvah. You need to have mature Jewish intent that is cultivating these grains into matzah. Rav Cohen Sedek says, "Katav letzei yidei chova balala rishona ena el b'matzah sha'af Yisrael l'shem matzah." You need a Jew to bake this; otherwise, it doesn't count. You can't get your help in the house to make this. You can't have a company hire non-Jewish workers to make matzahs, even if you say have in mind. That's what Rav Cohen Sedek says. Jews need to bake these matzahs with the right intent. Rav Haigon, however, disagrees. And of course, if you're a Rabbi Cohen Sedek and you say you need a Jew to bake the matzah, unless you're doing a bris on a machine, those the machines are not Jewish. How are they making the matzahs? Rav Haigon says as follows. Matzah sha'af anachri lifnei Yisrael. But if a non-Jew makes matzah in front of a Jew, al yedei shimur, and is being watched by the Jew, katikuna muteret liYisrael lo'ochla. If he's being watched and a Jew is in the room supervising mentally, that is good enough. That's Rav Haigon, and that's going to be important, particularly with machines. In number 11, we've got the Shulchan Aruch, who codifies bottom law. Ein lashin matzahs mitzvah v'lo ofinota al yidei en yehudi. A non-Jew cannot bake matzahs. It is not enough for somebody to be watching. V'lo al yidei chereshet v'katan. Anybody who can't generate the required intentionality, anybody who is deficient mentally, either in being not a mature Jew, halachically speaking, or being somebody who is considered to have mental challenges in a way they can't generate that intent, or if they're not Jewish, so they can't generate the Jewish component, the halachic component of this intent, they can't bake matzahs. It has to be a Jew baking with the right intent. The Mishnah Berurah bottom line rules, Dahatam, Danachri, V'cherushet, V'katan, Lav, B'nei Shimur, Ninu. They can't provide the intent, and that's the bottom line. As far as we're concerned, the halakhic bottom line is it has to be baked by a Jew. You can't simply watch it. Now, we move from there to the question of machines. Of course, this was hotly debated in the 1800s, the 19th century. But having said that, it was not controversial in America to begin with at all. Manischewitz were the first machine matzahs. He went into machine matzahs having started in Shechita. They're still producing matzahs now. And there's actually a long article written by a Jewish historian whose name I'm blanking on. Jonathan Sarna, there we go. He wrote How Matzahs Became Square. And he wrote about the history of machine matzahs in Europe and America. And in America, it didn't begin that controversial. Western Europe, it wasn't that controversial either. But when it hit Eastern Europe, where you have a lot more of the traditionalist Hasidic communities, it became incredibly problematic. And this was published, source 13, Moda'a Levet Yisrael, which means an announcement to the House of Israel. This is how they made big announcements back in the day. They would publish it. And this was Rav Shlomo Kluger. Rav Shlomo Kluger was the author of the responsa called Ha'elef Lecha Shlomo, and he was a hardened traditionalist. For those of you, again, who have been attending Suda Shlishit, he was the figure who was responding to the question they a community burned Mendelssohn's books. And they wrote to Rav Shlomo Kluger saying, did we do the right thing in burning his books and banning the people who were reading them? And he said, look, burning books may be a bit extreme, but yeah, I understand why you did it. He was a very hard traditionalist. And this is what he says. In order to fulfill your obligation to eat matzah, vadai, it 100% lo mahani doesn't work. But matzah with matzah, hanasit, which is made al yaday, what's that word?
Machine.
With any matzah that is made by machine, you cannot fulfill your obligation. That's his view. Why? Kiven, because the anan karmelan, because we learned the ein yotzin afilu ba'asa o cheresh odivakatan sheim lahamdat. We said some human being that is incapable of producing the right intent, you can't fulfill your obligation. End of the line. Ve'im kein, machine ze lo adif ma'aseh mi'maseh katan. How's a machine any better than a child? You press a button, you do something, and it starts working. It doesn't have intent of its own. Ein lo dat atzmo v'lo mahani afilu gadol omed al gabav. How can it possibly work, even if an adult is standing watch? We ruled in the Mishnah Berurah, who of course wasn't around when Rav Shlomo Kluger was writing. But the basic premise was, you need to have a Jew who can produce intent making these matzahs, and a machine can't do that. Lefi mashmaut haposkim. Be'inan shematzat mitzvah mitzchilat lisha ad afea ye hakol alidei Yisrael gadol. And now he's going to make an astounding claim. He's going to say, not only can't you fulfill your mitzvah of eating matzah with his matzah, but we should ban machine matzahs for the whole of Pesach. Just ban them all. Why? And we'll see now, in what amounts to an abundance of respect for the average Jew, we're starting over here. Hahamon am. Anyone want to translate that for me, that phrase? Hahamon am?
Amcha.
Masses.
Yeah, the general masses, which can sometimes have a positive connotation here. It means, you know, the ignorant crowds, the general population. She'einam yodim havchana ben shar matzot l'shel mitzvah. The general people don't really understand that there's a difference in standard between matzah generally and the matzah you need for your mitzvah. They assume matzah that's kosher is kosher matzah. I'll eat it for my mitzvah at Seder night. I'll eat it for my cream cheese sandwich on the fifth day, Chol HaMoed. Matzah's matzah. He says people don't understand that there's a special heightened need for the Seder. And what's going to happen? V'lo kayem yedei mitzvah. What they're going to do is they're going to buy the machine matzah for Pesach generally, and then they're going to start using it on Seder night. V'yasu gam kein bracha levatala. They mean a bracha levatala. They haven't fulfilled their mitzvah. U'bevadei lo yale al dato levakesh lo ozrim lematzah's mitzvah. V'ra'ui ligzar. And we should make a decree. Ha atu ha. This because of that. That if they start buying it in their house for Pesach generally, they're going to start using it at the Seder, and we should get rid of it all. He then makes a little comment about German Jews. Any German Jews out there, descended of German Jews?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. Ashkenazim, and here when he says Ashkenazim, he doesn't mean as opposed to Sfaradim. He means the Germans, Yasu Mashalibam Chavez Kedarakam. They do whatever they want to do. They just go with the wind. They're these modernish people who just take up the latest thing. V'anachnu, but we, traditional Eastern European Jews, Nelech Be'ikvot Avotenu, we follow the paths of our forefathers. Umehem lo nizas yamin as small, we're not going right or left. So the basic line, bottom line of Rav Shlomo Kluger is machine matzah says you can't fulfill your mitzvah. And because you can't fulfill your mitzvah, we're worried that people are going to buy it for Pesach to have their Chol HaMoed sandwiches. They're just going to use it for Pesach Seder night anyway. They're not going to know the difference. So we have to get rid of it all. And don't tell me, oh, the German Jews don't have a problem with it for the last 30 years. They're German Jews. They do what they want. We're not interested. That's his view. And again, this comes down to fundamentally that machines can't produce intent. So when you have a box of machine-made matzahs and it says machine shmura matzah, Rav Shlomo Kluger says incompatible. You can't have machine shmura because machines can't generate intent. Now, in response to this moda'ah, to this announcement, came something called the bitul moda'ah, nullification of the announcement. Pretend you didn't hear what was just said. And this was authored by Rav I don't know his first name. Yehuda, I know it's Shaul Nathanson. And he wrote the Divrei Shaul. I actually quoted him in my drasha on Erev Shabbos, which I noted he would come up today. And he was the most forceful figure who said, what do you mean machines can't produce intent? It's not a magical... my daughter's recently got into Beauty and the Beast. I don't know if any of you have any memory of watching Disney's Beauty and the Beast. Her father, Maurice, makes this machine that thinks on its own, basically. And Rabbi Nathanson is saying, I don't understand Rabbi Kluger. Machines don't do things on their own. People program them. People supervise them. People maintain them. People work them. You have to do things to it. Of course, it's like me taking a knife, cutting food and saying, oh, that wasn't me. That was the knife. If it's being controlled by human beings, of course it can generate intent. And he is the bottom line when it comes to Shmura Matzahs that are made by machine. And essentially across the board, this was the beginning point, saying, of course, machines can generate intent. I will point out, there was a debate. I don't know how many of you ever been to a, what in England we call an abattoir. Here you don't call it that. You call it, I think, a slaughterhouse or a schlachthaus, if you're Yiddish. Anyone ever been to an abattoir? Okay, good. I have to confess that I accidentally missed that trip during my smicha training. I was happy to do that in the abstract and theoretical. It's of course something that one gets used to if one's a shochet, but it can be very brutal to watch. I remember when I was in Gush, they had something they called Sheep Day. And it wasn't a celebration of nature. Let's put it that way. Sheep Day, they took three sheep and they taught us Hilchas Shechita, and they then shechted the sheep and barbecued it, and we ate it that night. It was a little difficult to watch. And I should point out that in London, the general Jewish population doesn't keep glut kosher meat. It's a kind of a chumrah people have, but the general population doesn't. Whereas I know in New York, glut is pretty much standard. And two of the sheep that day, on Sheep Day, we're not glut. So all the Brits in the yeshiva got to have two sheep to themselves and the Americans had one. That was a good day for us. Having said that, when it comes to Shechita, a question was posed in the Gemara. This was by the Talmudic sages nearly 2,000 years ago. What happens if I can set up a conveyor belt of knives? I press a button, I have the cows walking down and it just goes and it shechts them by machine. And I don't have to stand there shechting cow after cow after cow. Firstly, it's difficult to stand there emotionally to do this, but also it's time consuming. It's a lot of work. Why can't I just set up a machine? Of course, they didn't have electrical machines, but they had an idea that if you have a water mill, I could have a conveyor belt attached to the water mill. I'll put knives on the end and it will just go along shafting the animal. And the Gemara says that doesn't work because for Shechita, you need koach gavra. You need a human being to actually put their physical power behind what's happening. Now, that is not required in the context of matzah, and it's not required in the context of tzitzit. So as long as you have in mind, you press that button for Rabbi Nathanson and everybody that follows, as long as you have in mind when you press the machine button, this is for the mitzvah, whether it's tzitzit or matzah, the machine works. Again, shechita doesn't work because you need koach gavra. Anyone know another context you need koach gavra? You need human power?
For lighting an oven?
Oh, interesting. Lighting an oven. So when, in the context, you're talking about Bishul Akum?
Yes.
So when it comes to Bishul Akum, it's interesting. Would you need koach gavra? Do we need to strike a match to light an oven, or can you just turn the gas on? It turns out, bottom line, go on, someone leaning forward.
That's me. You turn the gas on, but that's still a, isn't that still... And gavra, you're doing something.
Right. So when it comes to Bishul Akum, you can just turn the gas on. But that then breeds the question that Jerry raises. Well, that was koach gavra. So how about when I press a button for shechita? That's koach gavra. So the assumption is that the direct act has to have koach gavra with shechita. When it comes to lighting an oven, you actually don't need koach gavra. You just turn on the gas. As long as a Jew initiates the cooking process, it's fine. You don't have to physically, you know, get flint out to do it. The one other time where koach gavra is needed in the most ideal case is actually netilat yadayim, washing hands, for when you're doing hamotzi. If you're about to wash hands, that's why we use a cup. You could just turn the tap on and put your hands underneath. And in the night, less ideal circumstance where you don't have a cup or a vessel, that's what you do. You turn on the tap and you wash your hands underneath. But actually, the reason we have a cup is you want koach gavra to purify the hands. Now, if I were doing symbolic, metaphoric homiletics, I would suggest that shchita and netilat yadayim have some unique component to them that require human agency in a very direct and very attached way in terms of my power, my muscle. Whereas everything else where it sits, it's a matzah, doesn't require that. Now, having said that the resistance to machine matzah was lishma, we're going to end that whole channel of discussion very abruptly by saying, bottom line, you can have lishma with machine matzahs for most people. There's some fringe views today that suggest you can't, but as you go to the supermarket very carefully, as it turns out today, you will see lots of shmura machine matzahs, which has been universally accepted. So what I want to do in the time that remains is have a look, because that was not the only opposition. As I said, this was a hotbed of resistance to modern technology, and I want to have a look. This was not just an abstract debate between two views. Is it lishma? Is it not lishma? Okay, like, you live your way, I'll live my way. You can have machine, I'll have handmade. We'll all be happy. Look at source 15. Hey, Hamoreid Tzedek, Reish Metivta Mekilatchem Ba'elai Bekublana Rabba. This is the Avnei Nezer, living again in the 1800s, who says, the rabbi of a local town came to me in great distress. Now, rabbis don't get distressed often, so this was noteworthy. Kikimchu et parnasato. They took away his parnasa. He was fired. And they extricated him from the community. There was this rabbi who came to the Avnei Nezer, a supreme halachic figure, who said that they fired me. So the whole reason they fired him was because he said, you can't have machine matzahs. Now, I'm not going to go into any territory banning machine or handmade, because I value my vocation. But this was a very touchy issue, and he was fired for that. Hinani, and now the Avnei Nezer says, behold, lahodiachem ki rabbei nai hadavar ma'od. This was awful to hear. And he's not going to say this was awful to hear, because why would you fire somebody over a legitimate halachic view? He's saying, two reasons I'm upset. Number one, hein guf ha-heter shel machine matzahs. You can't have machine matzahs. That's awful. Number one, hein masharaz for et hamoreid tzedek over sha'asah. And the fact that you got rid of the rabbis, doubly problematic. Vidaminag harama machine matzahs tibatlu, rehire the rabbi, get rid of these machine matzahs. Vinachapar lachem ala avar. The Skargod of the Kabbalah Mishamayim Alatid, and you will atone for the mistakes of the past and get immense reward for the future. So what we're seeing here is people are losing their jobs for taking a stand on this. It's a central issue. Number one, the community felt strong enough to get rid of the rabbi, and the rabbi felt strong enough to lay on his sword and ban the matzahs. Now, so what other resistances were there? And what we'll see is that there were five possible resistances to machine matzahs. Number one, this is Rav Shlomo Kluger again, but in his responsa, not in that publication. Number one, he says, Hachanami, be'im yaya al yidei machines, sarach shmir yatera. When it comes to machines, you are going to need extra supervision. Even let's say he says you can generate lishma with a machine, mi yodea im esek ha-machine mevatel shalo yachmit. There is a principle. Let me ask you a question. How long do matzahs have to be made? How long do you have to make a matzah before it becomes a problem?
18 minutes.
18 minutes. Thank you. That is exactly what I was hoping you would say. And the truth is, 18 minutes is the measure of time that if no one was touching the matzah, it would become chametz. The halachic presumption is, as long as the dough is being worked, you can stop it from leavening. Now, again, I'm not a scientist. My understanding is that when all the enzymes in the dough combine, it releases carbon dioxide, which over time would get caught in the dough, which leads it to rise. If you keep working and breaking it down, you stop that gas from being gathered and it doesn't rise. And halachically, in theory, if you keep working it, it can be longer than 18 minutes. And now the question he poses is, well, hold on, that's human working the dough. How do you know that machines working the dough stop it from becoming chametz? I can't think of a reason why it would be different, but he says, how do you know? Which is a reasonable question. And now he says something else. Gam kol minhag Yisrael Torah ma'olam. And Jewish custom is Torah. If that's the way we've done it, that's the way it stays. And have matzos agulim. We want, what is an eagle?
Round circle.
Round. We need to have round matzah. Velo merubayim. Not square matzahs. Some of you may prefer square matzahs. And actually, machine matzahs usually have to be square, because if they cut out the circle, the corners would get left in the machine and would gather and would cause the problem of the crumbs possibly becoming chametz, which is why they're square. So they get cut very neatly and don't have any remnants in the machine. And he says, so I've got a few more oppositions. Number one, I think it can be lishma, he says. But even if you don't think that's a problem, let me tell you, it's not going to stop it from becoming chametz by working it. Number one. Number two, it's going to be square and we need circle matzos. Why do you need circle matzos?
Correct. Because that's the way it always was.
Correct. Because that's the way it always was. That's the reason. And now we get to Psalm 17. He says, "Va'od l'da'ati," and in my view, al yedei dochak ha-machine, the working of the machine, na'aseh chimum, is going to create heat and friction. U'mechamem ha'isa, and it will heat up the dough. Al yedei dochak gadol l'zeh l'da'ati lo tov ha'davar klal u'chlal. And what happens if it heats up the machine?
It'll rise
quicker. So you're going to cut down again on that time. It's going to make chametz. So we've got resistance. You can't get lishma. Even if you think it's going to be kosher, you can't do the mitzvah. He says, now, if you think it's going to be lishma, it might become chametz, because who knows if it's working, it is going to stop it from becoming chametz. And actually, it working, it might heat it up and turn it into chametz. And number three, the minhag is to have round matzahs, so I can't possibly tolerate square ones. And then we get to the bottom line for the Rosh Shlomo Kluga. Have a look at this. This is his bottom line. Nearly, ain nearly. It seems to me that we should not la'asot chadashot bizman hazeh b'shum ofen ba'olam. We should not be doing new things. That's his bottom line. We shouldn't be innovating. Uvador hazeh, and in this generation, where the Jews were being emancipated and invited into general culture, when there were temptations to go to secular universities and go to the local pub and go to the theater and the circuses. Bedor hazeh kol hamosif goreya. Whoever adds and progresses is actually regressing. That's his suggestion. V'lo akasher dara, I will not allow a thing. Av shalo haya bi'adenu shum tam lemana'o. And even if we didn't have a good reason to say no, to say the machines are bad, haya ra'ui lemana'o, we should have stopped it anyway. We should not be innovating in this day. V'tama ani al kvodo, and I'm astonished that there is this rabbi, Echevi Raya, who brings me a proof and says, min ha'eisenbaum. Anyone know what the Eisenbaum is? I will give you a huge prize if you know what the Eisenbaum is. Good, I saved myself that prize. I had no idea either. I had to look in the references for this. It is the railroad. I have no idea why, but the Eisenbaum, I think it may have been founded in the railroad. And he says, we shouldn't be innovating. We shan't do anything new. And then somebody turns to Shlomo Kluger as he sees him writing this and says, didn't we get here by train today? What are you talking about? We shouldn't be innovating. And he says, yeah, don't bring me riots from the railroad. What has that got to do with machine matzahs? When it comes to just general convenience, do what you need. Wear whatever you want. But when it comes to a mitzvah, we have to follow what they've always said. We shouldn't be innovating. You may find that compelling, you may not. His colleague presumably did not, but Rosh Shlomo Kluger says, of course I'm going to use technology for daily convenience. I'm going to get a bus, I'm going to use a taxi, I'm going to use a phone, but don't tell me when it comes to the sacred activity of ritual life that I should start toying around with how things work. So Rosh Shlomo Kluger, we have 4 minutes left. Rosh Shlomo Kluger presents us 5 oppositions to machine matzahs. Number one, he says you can't have the intent, it can't be lishma. Number two, it might become chametz because it doesn't keep enough of a guard on it like human work would be. Number three, we need to have circle matzahs. Number four, actually the friction might increase the chance it becomes chametz. And number five, tevya. Tradition. Don't give me anything new. We're in an age of innovation and novelty, and it's changing the way that we practice. We need to avoid innovation. That's where he falls down. Those are his five oppositions. Bottom line, we said lishma, everybody agrees, is okay. Square matzahs also people seem to have accommodated to without much of a problem. Though some of you said you prefer handmade, maybe that's why you prefer handmade. You like it being circle. It feels a little more organic. And actually, we have circle as a symbol in Jewish life. Often when it comes to a shiva, we have circular food and elsewhere. And the idea that life is circular is obviously used by a number of the Hasidic readers who say that circle matzahs are important. The idea of innovating seems to have somewhat fallen away. Now, in the 3 minutes that remain, the Ketav Sofer, who is the son of the
Chasim
Sofer, indeed, whose last name was Sofer, where it was Schreiber, but the Hebrewized version of Schreiber was Sofer, and the Schreibers, or the Sofers, as they came to be known, were kind of the banner people for Ein Chadash Asu Min HaTorah. Nothing new should be done. And the Ketav Sofer in this piece here actually says, I know that we as a family have a reputation, we're against innovation, but frankly, I've seen how the machines work and I've seen how the workers work and the machines do a better job, and maybe we should be a bit more open to this. Now, in the 2 minutes that remain, here you have a little graphic there where you've got the 100% handmade logo that is being replaced by machines. And this brings us to why initially I called it matzah and nafta. As part of that initial moda'ah, that announcement, there was a figure who said, at root, there is one reason. The Rosh Shlomo Kluger can throw out five oppositions, but there is, for me, one basic fundamental reason to oppose machine matzahs. And this is what this figure says. Tam ha'isra bazeh nireh. It seems to me the real reason to prohibit ki harishon shibarishon, the very, very first reason, is ein zeh migeder hayoshev v'hamusar. It is not decent. It is not moral. Liot gozel aniyim, to steal from the poor. How a machine matzah is stealing from the poor?
Because they are the workers. They might be the workers who do the baking.
Precisely. And this is the debate that the country has been having for the last couple decades about trade war and trade limitations and free trade. If you have free trade, machines are going to get involved. You have automation where people are losing their jobs in factories. And do you say we're going to reject automation so that we keep people in work with a sense of dignity, with a sense of being able to earn? Or do we say, well, actually, we should just embrace progress? And what are the arguments against rejecting technology and automation? What are the arguments for automation economically?
Cheaper and faster.
Right. You got to pay less workers, so the companies making the products can charge you less money. And that's exactly what Rav Mordechai Lando says in the final source we have here. Why on earth, when we're talking about baking matzahs, is he talking about those who are in need? What has one got to do with the other? I understand that there are people who are needy. What's that got to do with whether machine matzahs are kosher? We should talk about kashrus separately to we're talking about social justice. And if machine matzahs are the best way to have kosher matzahs, you should do that. And then the philanthropist can take care of those who are needy. We shouldn't be inflating and rejecting technology to maintain worse quality matzahs in order to provide for the needy. We should find ways to provide for the needy and have the best matzahs. And also, he points out, gam al yedei machines, through the machines, yesh revach la aniyim acherim, actually, the people who are needy are going to be better off. Ki yasi yu hamatzahs bezol, because they can buy cheap matzahs. You're right, you may keep 10 poor people employed, but if you use machines, you're going to have 10,000 aniyim who can now afford matzahs because they're cheaper. So what we have at the end here is actually an economic debate about machine matzahs, which fundamentally cuts to the chase of what the resistance was for some of these figures. Now, it's 9:15, so I'm going to summarize and finish off with two thoughts. We started again at the beginning if one prefers handmade or machine matzahs. And we began this discussion with lishma. Can I have the right intent for shmura matzah? Bottom line was, we conclude that shmura matzah can be machine made, which is why you get boxes that say machine shmura. There were a number of resistances to machines on other levels, whether it was concerns about becoming chametz, concerns about not having round matzahs, concerns about innovation, and concerns about social justice, about getting people losing their work. And each one of those was rebuffed by different figures, suggesting that actually machine matzahs are more likely to be kosher because it's much quicker. In fact, Rabbi Soloveitchik, not Meir, but the original, Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, preferred machine matzahs because he felt they were quicker and they were less likely to become chametz than the handmade. So you've got everybody on each side of this. So the bottom line is not to guide you one way or other. You've all got your minhagim, you've all had plenty of sedarim, and you all have your preferences. The bottom line is twofold here. Number one is that when we talk about halachic issues, this is a very helpful demonstration of how these are not just abstract ivory tower debates about generating intent on its surface, but they are very much entwined with real lives and how we make decisions based on what helps people, whether they are needy or not. And this is, of course, very much in our minds today as we're going through this horrific in its anxiety and illness-inducing situation, that we have rabbis across the globe trying to engage these halachic issues in a very humane way, dealing with tradition on the one hand and necessity on the other, and that's very much in my mind. But I'll finish with one thought very much about Shmirah and technology. Because the bottom line, we say that Shmura Matzah can be produced by machines, but it has to be watched and it has to be guarded all the time. And I think it's incredibly helpful when we think about progress, specifically technological progress, that Shmirah, it is so important that we don't lose sight of the things that we are losing. And I don't just mean we should be watching what we're doing online, but I mean the subtle, invisible losses, which I think many of us are feeling now, that technology is a blessing, but there is no way that us sitting here together is a replacement for us sitting with each other and being able to, I've stopped sharing my screen now, it is in no way a replacement for us to be able to be in the same room. As you can see, the Beit Midrash behind me, it is a very sad sight to have an empty room downstairs that isn't being used around the clock. And technology is a blessing. But we have Shmirah and we watch what we lose. And I hope that everything turns lishma and goes out for a blessing. We're now going to turn to Maariv. I want to thank you all for tuning in.